Today is Thursday, April 12th, 2018. It's 11:16 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals weekly podcast we record in the studios at WGN Radio in Chicago. I'm on weekdays on WGN from 1 to 3 and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. till noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Krista McQuarrie with the Tribune Editorial Board and a new column debuting now every Tuesday.
I love the self-promotion. She's
I'm just
you're no Eric
I know, Sane. Because I just love that you're doing that. I'm happy for
yeah,
you.
Congrats. I'm looking forward to reading it. When you've written columns and your editorials are terrific, if anybody should have a column more regularly, it's you. So props to you. What do you got, Scotty?
Scott Stannis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, one of the non-marquee columnists, along with Krista McQuarrie. And my column runs Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Eric is sharing a microphone because of a technical difficulty here at the crumbling Tribune Tower with Scott Stantis.
That and a general fondness for each other.
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
They like their thighs to touch.
Don't judge.
Oh, Lord. They are so the owners of this building, treating this building like sellers, not buyers. I mean, I'm telling you, the things that don't work well here anymore.
Toilets?
Water fountains, elevators. Mm-hmm. Anything plumbing related.
Oh, my ceiling collapsed in my office, which is just below a men's room.
There's one elevator if you get in and you press like 7 and it says, okay.
Yeah.
Instead of going to 7.
No numbers display. It goes, in essence, I'll do my best.
Right.
We'll get you as close as we can.
One of the elevators it has the wrong floor, so you'll say like 6, 7.
Yeah,
five.
Right. Yeah, we're all going to miss this, but if I had my druthers, they'd make this building more, they'd fix it and we'd stay. But you guys are going to Prudential Plaza, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, we're going over there in early June. So.
And we will be exiting here for a building just across the river. Speaker Paul Ryan will cross the finish line, he says, ending his term and ending his speakership in November at the House of Representatives. He said he's tired of being a weekend part-time father. Asked by Gayle King on CBS today if he was also leaving due to Trump fatigue, he said no, that there is great esprit de corps around him and that he has accomplished the things he wanted to, like tax reform.
Did Trump fatigue in any way play a role?
No, the other factor is I feel like I've actually gotten most done what I wanted to do. So I've been here 20 years in Congress. I'm an old Jack Kemp guy. I've been working on tax reform since I got here. It's why I became chair of the Ways and Means Committee.
At a White House dinner last night with the president and vice president and a few others, Speaker Ryan and the group posed with the president's signature thumbs up. Do any of you expect him to speak critically about the president or the administration between now and the end?
Gayle King, but that just said it all right there because I don't expect him to, but also he was so tied up and unwilling to break those ties, that he wouldn't even say today that, that the Trump issues are making Washington more difficult. I mean, I just think that speaks to all of it.
I think there are lots of things that make his job difficult and make Washington difficult, not just Trump, but having to deal with a caucus that's, severely divided between more establishment Republicans and the Freedom Caucus.
And a job he never wanted.
And a job he never wanted. So, and you have to, we are in an election year. He doesn't want Republicans to lose the House, and it's looking like, of course, they're going to, but he's not going to badmouth Trump
and
risk that.
The Republicans will lose the House?
Yes, I do.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's way too many congressmen stepping down now.
But in districts where Republicans have won.
Well, we have a liberal Democratic senator from the state of Alabama.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you think about all this, Eric Zorn?
It seems to me that Ryan has basically failed in his overall mission, which was he wanted, to bring the budget in line, and the budget, thanks in part to this, tax quote-unquote reform that we have, the deficits are spiraling even higher than they were before. That was his signature issue. That was his, when he came to Congress, he was the wonky guy from Wisconsin who knew his budget tricks. I think he failed in that. I don't know what you can point to as an accomplishment. I know that some people say, well, he got this tax change through. I'm still not persuaded that that was a good thing long term for our economy. He's always wanted to cut entitlements. He's been unable to do that. And I'm glad he's gone.
Kristen has a very concerned look on her face. I don't know why.
I know. This is so painful to listen to because I think he was one of the few people who began talking about entitlement reform. He was one of the people willing to put votes on entitlement reform. You say cuts. Well, we have to do something. I mean, basically, Social Security, Medicare, it's a Ponzi scheme. We are all paying into a pyramid scheme that is going to run out of money. And nobody wants to talk about it. And it's among the frustration of Trump voters and Freedom Caucus members is that they send fiscal conservatives to Washington and they won't change anything. And nobody was talking about this before Paul Ryan started talking
about it. Yeah,
but
that's on a conservative Congress that passed this. I mean, I think one of the reasons he'll be glad to not be in the Congress is because he's not going to be having to figure out how to pay for some of this stuff. I mean, this isn't acting like a Republican Congress.
Well, no. I mean, the tax reform bill, they are counting on economic growth. I know. Go ahead and laugh. I do, too.
I shouldn't laugh. What's the matter, Scott?
I don't laugh because it has worked in the past. The fact is you pour more capital into an economy. There's more capital for people to do innovation, job creation, and it does work to a certain extent. The increases during the Reagan administration, when they had the budget cut, the tax cuts, the tax revenues actually went up. The problem is, as it always is that the Congress spends like drunken Democrats, and they spend at a pace that is far faster than the rate of revenue coming in. So my disappointment with Paul Ryan, and I'm deeply disappointed in how he served as Speaker, albeit he claimed he didn't want it, which smacks of, you know,
I believe that he didn't want it. I don't know.
He had run for Vice President of the United States. Clearly,
it's an easier job.
Let's face it. You get a house.
This is the hardest speakership to ever endure.
Right. This is a Kemp/Reagan Republican who had those ideals, and those ideals are dead and gone now in this Republican.
But I think, and you're right, you can explain away his, you know, being silent to Trump or being quiet to Trump and all of that in the present moment. All of that makes some sort of sense. I do think in 20 years, we will look back and we will remember him as a guy who acquiesced in the face of a man who didn't belong in the White House.
Trump was elected.
I don't mean he wasn't elected.
The Speaker of the House could not, during the course of this, while trying to pass policy, which I do think was Paul Ryan's focus, be throwing the President of the United States under the bus and then disenfranchising the whole Freedom Caucus and all the people who actually have supporters in their districts who strongly support President Trump. That would have been a terrible thing for him to do.
He showed some spine during the election when he was speaking out against Trump, but then when the rubber hit the road with things like Charlottesville, in places where he did not show any courage, he didn't show any principle. I mean, he wanted to get his tax cuts through, but what did he get? I mean, do you think he would have been unable to pass the tax bill if he had been critical of Trump, if he had been leading? I mean, the question that keeps coming up is what's happened to the Republican Party? And part of it is that they've all gone into this crouch, this fetal position over Trump. And, I mean, I think there are a lot of really principled Republicans out there, but you just don't hear from them anymore because they're all afraid of these core Trump voters who they think can't deal with any bad medicine that might come from.
That's why I keep wondering if he's going to go all Flake on us at some point. Senator Flake, on the way out, now speaking his mind.
And he won't, because he would have by now. And I understand what you're saying, Kristen, about all of that. But there's a point, you know, where the president of the United States this morning tweeting, well, we might strike Syria soon or it might not be so soon. And, you know, I mean, completely not unpresidential, but anti-presidential. Some of the stuff he's done has hurt the country. And I think there was a place for him to I wish the Republicans had governed as if Trump wasn't a Republican president. I wish the Republicans in the Congress had just taken over and said, we're a third of this government and we're going to do what we need to do and we'll see what the president does.
You know, underestimating Trump support and Trump voters again. I mean, Paul Ryan comes from Janesville, Illinois. He was challenged on the right in his last election.
Do you think he was in danger?
He wasn't. I mean, he did okay. I don't remember what the vote totals were.
But this time.
No, I don't think so, especially based on the last time around. But I just think you're underestimating the Trump enthusiasm that is still out there.
I don't think these Trump supporters are so wild-eyed that they can't deal with somebody, you know, selectively and surgically criticizing the president for things that he's doing. I mean, I don't think you have to be a cheerleader for Trump to maintain the support of Trump voters.
He hasn't been a cheerleader for Trump, and it also bothers me when we judge someone based on what they say. You know, somebody sticks a microphone in your face, and we all have to react every day to what Trump tweets or says or whatnot, and we want Governor Rauner to respond to everything Trump says or does. It's silly. It's lazy reporting. We shouldn't be putting people on the spot all the time to have them react to something that's
completely outside of them. But shouldn't he have been proactive? Well, he's had plenty of time to measure his words and thoughts. And
he
come
has.
Up.
He makes the point, or he argues, that he could get more done by privately talking to the president than by publicly criticizing him.
And he has.
I'm just saying.
Duh. Like, that makes that is smart leadership.
I don't know.
In my opinion.
I don't know. The people on Fox News who get him to do everything, they do it publicly.
Well, I'd like, as an American citizen, I would like to see some Republicans step up and say this is wrong, what the president is tweeting, saying, or doing sometimes. And as a leader of the Republicans,
of the country, he's the House
and
Speaker.
And what he says sometimes is, when asked, "Do you support the president's tweet about Syria?" He'll say, "No, I don't think that was a good idea," but he never takes that next step.
He is the leader of the caucus, okay? He is not the leader of the country. He is the leader of the Republican caucus, and he would be ineffective if he did not, you know, understand that a lot of his caucus members are Trump supporters and Freedom Caucus
members. But was he effective?
I mean, I don't think – you look at anybody. I don't think Harry Reid is very effective. I think he was effective at keeping the caucus together for the time that he has been speaker. And I do think he gets credit. He was a former Ways and Means chairman for getting the intricate details of the tax reform plan in place and signed into law. I don't think he's a failure by any means. And I'm going to talk about him a little more during our recommendations because I want you all to watch something.
I know we're moving on. I don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying he's a failure. I think he missed opportunities. I think he came up short when there was an opportunity to really take difficult leadership positions that might have hurt him and might have hurt the caucus, but he did not step up and lead in
on a personal level. Steve, I think that picture he took where he's got the Trump signature thumbs up the day after he announces that he's going to not run for Congress again, I think that's going to be his legacy. He was there, thumbs up for President Trump. And I don't think history is going to judge Trump well, and therefore I think his acquiescence to President Trump is going to be on him. And he can talk about all the time he wants to spend with his kids, but I think that's using his kids as a convenient way out. And someday those kids are going to look back at that picture and say, "Dad, that guy was a monster. What were you doing?" That's his legacy.
Yeah, where were you? Why didn't you stay? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, no matter what he says about wanting to spend more time with his family, that if he didn't see a blue wave coming, if he didn't have a great deal of personal frustration in dealing with this guy, Trump, who is not anything like Ryan in terms of, I mean, Ryan is somewhat cerebral. He truly is a family man. I've never heard anything whispered about him.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, a lot of things about Trump are abhorrent to him. He certainly said that during the campaign. All of a sudden, then he you know, puts on the brakes, and we hear the record scratch. It's the new Paul Ryan. But I don't believe for a second if things were going well in the country, if he had confidence in Trump, and if he felt like things were like on the path for him to continue to be Speaker, I think he'd be staying.
Does anybody here think that Janesville is going to put a Democrat in that seat?
No.
Yeah.
I think it's possible. I think, like, there's a guy running up there.
Come on.
Well, that's what I was asking, because from what I heard,
Scott and Eric are sharing a microphone. Right, we'll hear from you in a moment.
Like another one of these, like, crazy people.
Here, somebody can have mine.
Running for, so they're going to have to find the new candidate. This guy has been, he's like a blue collar guy. He's been running. So anyway, I think it's possible.
Scott Stantis, your thoughts, go.
The current candidate who's running, the hard hat guy who's, no.
Thank you. Senator Dick Durbin asked Mark Zuckerberg if he'd like to share with everyone where he stayed last night.
Mr. Zuckerberg, would you be comfortable sharing with us the name of the hotel you stayed in last night?
No.
If you've messaged anybody this week, would you share with us the names of the people you've messaged?
Senator, no, I would probably not choose to do that publicly here.
I think that might be what this is all about.
And the Facebook creator declined, and the room chuckled. It was a great point for Durbin. Are you guys mad at Zuckerberg or Facebook? And what do you want either of them to do?
I don't get this, frankly.
I'm with you.
It's like when, and I keep bringing up Dominic's because.
Why?
I don't know why.
The
but
pizza
you know,
place?
When
no,
I go to Dominic's,
store?
When I used to go to Dominic's and use my Dominic's card, Dominic's knew what I bought. They knew when I bought it. They knew what I bought with it. And then they gave that information to Procter & Gamble or Heinz Ketchup or whatever.
And they generated coupons at checkout.
Exactly. So when I'm playing in Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook playbox or sandbox, I understand that the information I'm putting out there is no longer just mine. I get that. And, you know, maybe it's because we're in a different position where our friends on Facebook, I don't even know them, right? So I don't put things up there that would be private, but it's just, it is what it is. I don't understand the offense. I do understand that if you're violating policy and sharing contrary to that policy or rules, that's the stuff that needs to be cleaned up. But as far as my quote-unquote data being shared, my birthday's February 3rd, 1963. There, you all know it. You know, I don't quite.
Well, we're going to need somebody to be the voice of outrage, and it's not going to be you either, is it?
It's not. I mean, I understand that the part of this, part of the data was sold to a company to use in a political campaign. So that's where I think we've crossed a line. But the point of that is to influence people, and we're influenced by political television ads and political mail and all kinds of, and social media and tweets and everything we're influenced by. So I'm just going to rest my case with Steve's brilliant description.
And I'm going to go home.
Well, I'm going to just add another argument here in that, you know, with the outrage here, I mean, I don't have outrage because guess what? You know how much I pay for Facebook? About as much as you guys pay for it.
Right.
It's free. It's a service they're providing for free. So how do they monetize it? They monetize it using mining the information that I voluntarily give to a free service. I'm with you. I don't know where I'm not outraged by this.
To quote Bob Dole, where's the outrage?
Scott Stannis has a weakness for cashews.
Now you've done it.
I want to share that. No, I mean, I find myself in agreement with the table. John, you're looking at me
it's sad if all five of us are on the same page. But again, but we are also media creatures.
I would like there to be more transparency as to where this data is going. But again, it's like I've asked this question to not everybody. I think I brought it up on the show. It's like, can anyone name a time where you felt like your privacy has been violated in a way that threatens or scares or disadvantages you in some way on Facebook?
Yes, actually I can. Janine's father, without getting into detail, was having kidney issues, needed a catheter. She looked up and saw where she can get one online. For the next 8 months, apparently she looked it up on my computer, because for the next 8 months I got ads asking me, what do you think of this catheter? Hey, here's one.
Yeah, but what's offensive about that? What's offensive about that?
Well, catheters?
No, seriously, you were looking for catheter information.
Yes.
So it wasn't helpful that catheter information was being volunteered to you?
We had made that decision and went forward and purchased the said catheters, but for the following almost more than half a year, these things kept popping.
I made in a weak moment clicked on some underwear ad. These are the best underwear ever.
Right, it was
and
a weak moment.
For a year, I'm looking at men in their underwear.
But you can choose not to click on it, right?
Yeah, and I did. And I did click on it, so I'm like, oh, here we go again.
This is a small price to pay for the service that Facebook and Gmail and those things offer for free, in my opinion. It's irritating to see. The other day I had this bet with Steve Chapman about the one of the games in the basketball tournament, and he had to wear a Michigan hat if Michigan won, and Michigan had won the game. So, and I wanted to put a picture online of a Michigan hat, so I went and found an ad for one, clicked up. And ever since then, I've been getting ads for Michigan hats. And it's like, it's kind of funny, but it's not like troubling. Like, people are going to show up at my house.
Now, very different though, is I do think, and I don't know if this come up as much, but what they do need to crack down on are the fabricated stories that get shared and the misinformation that gets shared. That is a real, that is a threat. That is a danger. I don't think knowing, what clubs I belong to is a threat to me.
Yeah, that is really, I think that's a good point, Steve, because we're all talking about how it's something that we volunteer and that if ads follow us, it's a price to pay. I'm completely with that. But the fact that they seem to know what buttons to push, what alarms you, they seem to not only know what you're interested in, but they seem to know something about your personality. And then that's what came from this Cambridge thing, is that then they actually craft ads or posts that seem to play on your fears about immigration or about guns. And that is how you influence an election. I don't know the solution to that. I don't know that Zuckerberg does. And frankly, I don't know that you can. I liken it these days to air pollution. It's out there. You breathe it. You wish it wasn't there. You should safeguard yourself from it. But what can you do about data sharing or misinformation? I have no hope or expectation that they or anybody can. I think this is totally on us as consumers. If you're going to be on the internet, if you're going to be on Facebook, that's your problem.
Well, here's a question for you. Should Facebook or YouTube be a platform for some of these really crazy, sick, weird conspiracy theories like Pizzagate that allege, like, I mean, it's just, it's inflammatory nonsense. And I am not necessarily offering an opinion as to what they should do about it, but what do people on the table think? Should they censor those the way they do pornography?
How would you identify them?
Well, you'd have to have a substantial staff of people going
through. That's the question. Do you really want somebody at Facebook screening what shows up in your feed? I certainly do not, and I don't want the government to do it either. So,
and I don't know that it's always so black and white as
right.
Pizzagate.
Some of those are really obvious, and other ones are the line between. I mean, there's a. You know, fake news is this term thown around all the time for anything you don't agree with.
Well, the president right now would slate the New York Times as being irrelevant or inaccurate or fake, right?
Right. But there are things that are just completely concocted, or like some of these 4chan conspiracies that are out there. And I guess the question becomes, and Kristen has just answered it, do you want this entity, Facebook, going through and saying, no, we don't want... I don't know the
answer.
I mean,
he did testify that they are trying to do that.
They are trying to
identify, like, fake accounts. And I'm fine with that if it's, you know, not connected to a real person and they have some algorithms where they can figure that out.
Yeah,
that's okay. But
sure.
I don't want someone saying, you know, we can't... The Pizzagate happened. It was obviously fake news, but I don't want Facebook trying to determine what to screen.
Once again, it's their
query column. I don't like her reasoning. We're going to get that.
Once again, we're in his sandbox, so I think I'm perfectly fine with him doing that. And you know, it just happened with
Zuckerberg. Yeah,
it just happened with one of the kids from the Parkland shooting, right? Where he gave an interview and said, well, "I rode my bike back to the school," and then there were these stories that he was never at the school ever. You know, the biggest guy, I don't have his name now.
David Hogg, you're talking about?
David Hogg, yeah.
Sure.
And the people were ripping on him like he wasn't even there, which was a lie. He was there.
Boy, the abuse that kid has taken is stunning.
So I'm all for, again, it's his, if he ends up losing money because people are angry about it and leave, you know, then that's the free market. But I am all for them censoring what's on there.
You know what the I think the number.
So no conservative news then, since he doesn't.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Nothing.
Okay, well, there have been some accusations that there are people getting blocked, that there is less of a tolerance for conservative news floating around on Facebook.
Well, I would not. That would not be my standard. Obviously, if that becomes the problem, then conservatives would leave and go somewhere else, and then they would react to that. That's a free market, right? I don't understand. I'm liberal, so I don't do the free market very well, but that's what the free market is.
Well, I'd hate to see.
Me, the free market is not censoring what shows up there. But I understand you're saying it's his platform.
I mean,
he lost. Didn't
go
the stock?
Scotty.
Yeah, sorry.
I think ultimately what we're all talking about and the big takeaway from all of this is we owe MySpace a big apology.
I was just thinking, you know, I wonder if the internet will fraction the way broadcast television has, that you'll have a conservative portal and you'll have a liberal portal.
Well, have any of you got
Facebook will be liberal
in the last 48 hours? People promoting like here's effectively an alternative to Facebook. It's stuff I've never heard of, and one of them was conservative.
Yeah,
and it's like so you guys are getting the same stuff.
No, but a lot of people are boycotting Facebook by joining Instagram, which is owned
by Facebook.
Facebook.
I'll get them.
Instagram is not really analogous to Facebook, and you don't have the links to stories.
Right.
You know, it's a photo site.
I want to ask you: did the president do what he accused President Obama of doing, telegraphing military plans when he warned Russia with a tweet that smart missiles were coming? Now he says, "Well, I didn't say when." by the way, that pause was Kristen McQuarrie rolling her eyes. It's a fair question.
No, I'm agreeing with it's. Of course he was. And of course he's being a total hypocrite based on what he campaigned on. I mean, there's just no question about it. I'm not defending Trump all the time, but I mean, and then this is certainly a moment where I would not. That was just a ridiculous, dangerous, alarming, and hypocritical thing.
Unvetted thing, not run by either allies or staff. That was just him riffing one day, saying, oh, we'll teach them.
I think of this as why I oughta. somebody hold me back.
Why I oughta is our foreign policy. Why I oughta.
Is that from Three Stooges?
Honeymooners?
Either Ralph Cramden or Moe. Right. It's one of them.
Cramden, Moe. Trump.
You guys, last week, Eric and Kristen weren't here. Scott, you were here for the conversation.
Oh, I'll never forget it. He had great contributions.
About what to do with the Tribune Tower, which we're exiting. We talked about at the beginning of this podcast. The Chicago Tribune sign is emblazoned onto the side. The Tribune and the new owners are fighting over who gets to keep the sign. Each of them want it. It dawned on me that I don't think we made this point well enough last week. What's the matter with Tronc? What's the matter with the Tribune? Don't they want free publicity? Normally, you have to pay millions of dollars to get somebody to put your sign on the side of their building. There it is for everybody to see. It strikes me as being a little petulant that the Tribune says, well, now we're going to take our sign and go home. Why would you do that? You should have that sign on public display where it's been for decades and decades.
So you're saying they're giving away a free billboard?
Yeah, I am. I am. I don't know that we've. I'm like, it's the more I think about it, the dumber I think the Tribune's position on this
well, I'm disappointed because there's a big WGN radio sign just down the building and no one seems to
no
care.
No one's fighting over that.
Right.
No, it's a good point that you know, it's people coming across the bridge are going to see Chicago Tribune. It's,
yeah.
It's a logo there. I guess probably the fear is that if this building turns into some sort of a hellhole or you know, where some terrible thing happens and it's associated with the Tribune too closely.
Yeah.
Because it's all about keeping control of your brand. That's, I think, what our lawsuit or Tronc's lawsuit is all about. So.
Yeah. You on that same page?
I'm trying to care, but I really don't.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, I guess, yeah, you. I understand that point, but I can't really imagine, as expensive as the real estate is, that something would go there that would be extraordinarily demeaning to the Chicago Tribune. I imagine last week a sex shop or, I don't know, a gun store or something that
editorially. Maybe a newspaper.
We advertise for all
of those things.
So we're not quite pure.
Okay. Those are the three big topics I have. Anything else any of you want to bounce off of us before we do our recommendations? Let's do our recommendations. Steve, you usually go first.
Yeah, I'm laying fallow this week. I've got nothing.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Wow. I stuck around for that.
Kristen?
Well, so you're going to, I want you all to go watch, since we're all in Paul Ryan love land, right? Go watch Charlie Rose's interview with him from January 18th, 2017. And then you will perhaps have a better appreciation for why it is not a good thing that he's leaving Washington.
Mr. President, I'd like to amend my statement from the floor.
Mr. Bertrand, your recommendation?
Strongly recommend Kristen McQuery's column in the Chicago Tribune.
Oh, look at you.
When can we read that, Kristen?
It doesn't seem sincere. Well, you're not knowing anything about it.
It already started.
I know. I've loved
Tuesdays,
that one.
Tuesdays.
He has no idea. He didn't read it.
So are you carving out a niche, or will it be the random thoughts and musings of you? Will it always be political? Can it be, what will your column be?
Gosh, I haven't really thought about that. Probably, you know, politics and government from a different point of view.
No. Yeah. Being conservative?
A little bit more leaning, yeah.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of the columnists in the Chicago Tribune are, for a conservative paper, pretty liberal.
You don't say.
And I've, with the exception of Eric's, with the exception of John Cass, I think, wow, who is the sort of righteous, strident voice of the right in this right-leaning newspaper? And you don't see it. The Tribune published a Cal Thomas article last week, an op-ed of his in the editorial pages, where he twice called David Hogg a coward, the 17-year-old boy who's watched his friends get killed. And I thought that was beneath the Tribune. I was so disappointed in seeing that.
I didn't see it.
Run.
I usually like Cal Thomas, but I would not have
done that.
Supported that.
Well,
no.
If we can get a local conservative voice in there, that would seem to balance it without going to the ridiculous lengths that Cal Thomas did in that case. Eric, what are you liking this week?
Well, it's not a question of liking. I really want people to read this article in Chicago Magazine called The Stairwell. It's very controversial. Mayor Emanuel said he would not use it to light his fireplace with. He hates it so much. But it's a story of Shamari Ligeti, the guy who shot Paul Bauer, the police commander. And it's the story of both of their lives kind of entwined around each other as they grew up in Chicago. And the lead of the story talks about how it just seems like a bad guy shot a good guy. And then the story says it's more complicated than that. And you read the stories and they talk about, you know, the shooter's life and they talk about the commander's life. It's very deeply reported, but I can understand why, as I read it, it's like, do I like this article it's interesting to me. Every crime story has these incredible backstories to them. We seldom get to hear them. But the analysis of saying that this is complicated, like there's something that softens what happened, I think that may go too far. I'm just curious what other people think about this. I'm interested in what the reaction of the people would be to that
I heard
story.
Some of the controversy, I think Eddie Johnson said this at the City Club, yes. Is that the reporters did not make it clear that was what they were doing. And so Mrs. Bauer agreed to sit down. They sat around the kitchen table. She kind of invited them into her home, into her heart, and didn't realize that they were going to kind of paint a sympathetic picture of the shooter. That's what I've heard. I don't know whether that's... That's what Eddie Johnson said at City Club.
If people are talking about it, interesting thing to read.
And this is in the latest issue of Chicago
it's online,
Magazine?
Chicago Magazine.
Yeah. ChicagoMagazine.com. How about you?
I'm kind of I want to be the Krista McCrory of my generation. So I've actually written a book review. It's kind of baby steps towards maybe someday having my own column. I'm kidding, actually. But I did write a book review of Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto. It's an absolute page-turner. It's by Alan Stern, who is the principal investigator, and David Grinspoon. And it is a terrific book. And just I write about it at length in the Chicago Tribune. It'll be in the, I think, this weekend's edition.
That's exciting. Book reviewer.
Yes.
Got to add that to your long resume.
I'm wearing the tweedish type coat. I need to earn my leather elbow patches.
I've got two books to pass along to you guys, although I think everybody should, if you get too stressed out in the world, go watch the video of Yodeling Boy.
Baby, say goodbye. I don't know what to do. All I do is say goodbye. Lord, that last long day she said goodbye.
Have you seen the Yodeling Boy at the Walmart?
I heard about it.
Oh. From Southern Illinois, right?
Yeah, he is. He's from downstate. It's not Mattoon. What is it? It's further downstate. Is it Harrisburg? Thank you, Elif. It's Harrisburg, Illinois, way down south. And he was standing in a Walmart yodeling, and you knew two things were going to happen. One, it would go viral, and two, it would go on Ellen. And he was on Ellen. And she said, why do you yodel at the Walmart? And he said, because that's the only store we got. And he's just an adorable kid, and he's a dang good yodeler.
Have you seen the dance remixes of this?
They've yes,
got
I
a
have.
Whole bunch of, it's incredible. There are like 20 of them I saw. Online.
I watched a video where a guy actually went to great length to show how he was working that in with a new beat. The kid is adorable. I don't know if it's going to make any money. Okay. Also, I want to just recommend Chasing King's Killer. It's a book for juvenile audiences, you know, like 15, middle school to high school. And it's about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and the hunt for James Earl Ray. And it gives some backstory. And, you know, when you read a book that's written for junior high or high school level, you think, well, I'm above. I know all of this. I didn't. It's the only...
Do they bring in the FBI's involvement?
Very much so.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's fascinating how the FBI...
And did they talk about that, how the King family now doesn't think James Earl Ray was a killer? I
mean, he does not mention that in his book.
There's a whole thing in the Washington Post about that.
No kidding.
Not too long ago, yeah.
Well, the book starts with the fact that shortly after he wrote his first book, Martin Luther King Jr., an African-American woman in her mid-40s who was mad at him and crazy took a small knife, a sharpened letter opener, and thrust it into his chest and stabbed him right there. He survived that, and I'm thinking, I knew that, right? Maybe I didn't. It's just a very nice little telling of King's story and the hunt for his killer, Chasing King's Killer. So Yodeling Boy and that are my recommendations. Ben Cortez, thank you for engineering The Mincing Rascal. Scott Stantis, Eric Zorn, thank you for being part of it and sharing a microphone. Kristen McQuarrie and Steve Bertrand, too. The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.